this week's parsha deals with something that's so strange in its makeup. We're dealing with Metzora, with Tazria Metzora, with Tzaras. It's clear there's a message being taught here. This is not about Tzaras. It's not about the concept of what Tzaras is, that a person gets this, you know, this malady, and then all of a sudden he's sent out of the camp and he's not able to come in. There are a myriad of details. Obviously, when we go through the Mishnayos and Negayim, it's just crazy. And the amount of psukim that we spend speaking about this, I'm obviously excluding Leda from the beginning of the Parsha, I'm excluding Zav and Ziva from the end of Parshas Metzora, but Tzaras Begadim, Tzaras Batim, which may not have even ever existed, there's clearly a message over here. The fact that Tzaras Batim is Lohayav Luyia, never was, never will be, is clearly a message to us. There's something here that we're supposed to learn. And the Gemara is saying, Yagdol Tor V'yadir, that you're supposed to bring up Torah and be madrid, and love it, you know, cherish it, so to speak, is clearly a message that we're supposed to learn from over here. So what is it? What's that message that we're supposed to get from it? And the clear message is we have to start looking for signs that God is in our life, that there's signs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us at all times. And even though we sometimes might feel like, you know, like maybe yeah, maybe no, like Hashgacha Pratis works when things are going well or really badly, but in my daily life, I don't necessarily see God's hand in everything. This is showing us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us, especially in the bad times, especially when the horrible things happen to us, when there are terrible things. You know, my Rebbe, Rebbe Levin, was once in a car with a famous Yerushalayim personality, Yerushalmi personality, I should say, and he stopped by a red light. He had gotten right to there, and everybody's been in this position where you see it turning yellow or orange, depending on where you're from. The weirdos say orange, right? And you're getting up to the stoplight, to the Ramzor, right? And you're getting there, and you're like, oh my gosh, if I push on the pedal right now, I'm still going to make it. And you go, and then you miss it. You just miss it, and you're right there. So you know what happens. You sit there at the red light, and you're just like, you're doing that like, oh, like that. So he kvetched. He kvetched out loud, right? And he's like, oh. Right, that. And Rav Asher Arieli, who was in the car with him, right, turns to him in his style of, you know, a Magid Shir, and said, you know, Rav Chatzko Levenstein never missed a red light. Never missed a red light. So Rav Levin was like, are you rubbing in salt into the wound? Is that what you're doing right now? Right? And he said, sometimes, you know, with a pause, because that's what a Magid Shir does, right, with a pause, he said, sometimes he was the first for the next green light. It's a subject matter where you sit there and you're like, it's right. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted me to make this green, I would have made this green. I know how upset I get when I'm stuck behind a car that's going 25 miles an hour down Pratt. There is nothing. Well, actually, no. By far the worst thing is being on Tui and Kedzi. I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu, literally my modim is 99% made up of thinking HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I don't no longer have to worry about Tui and Kedzi. I don't know what you were thinking, Rav Chandra. I don't know what you were thinking. Tui and Kedzi makes everything worth it. I would pay extra money to stay away from it. I get that. But when you're stuck behind that car going 25 miles an hour during Pratt, I know how frustrating it is. I know how unbelievable. You go, you turn the left, and all of a sudden you're behind a school bus. And you know the school bus is making pickups, one after the other, as it goes down the street. Of course, that's unbelievably frustrating. But this is all part of a grand plan. It's all part of a huge plan. And yeah, I don't have the vision to be able to see how that's part of everything. But it's clear that that's part of the plan. There's something there. There's something that I'm supposed to get out of it. I don't know if people heard about the tragedy that happened not too long ago, the Chassan and Kala. Did you hear about that? The Chassan and Kala that were killed in a car crash by a drunken driver, high driver, whichever one it was. There is no way that we will understand in this world why such a thing like that has to happen, why such a tragedy has to happen to anyone. That's just a horrible thing, an absolutely horrible thing to think about. But there's a plan. Had they made enough green lights, they wouldn't have been in that position where that person could hit them. But they didn't make those green lights. They didn't leave 5 minutes earlier. They didn't leave 5 minutes later. They were in that position because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to be in that position. That does not minimize or mitigate the tragedy of what it is. It's a horrible, horrible tragedy, and one of the worst. But there is Hashgacha Pratis. And we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules over this and tells us what to do and leads us in the direction that we're in. There is human intervention, there's human error, and those things come into play as well. With Rav Dessler's idea, can a person kill somebody without HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, so to speak, permission? Can you supersede God's judgment? And I get that. The concept is still there. Conceptually, I still get it. But that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts everyone in the right place at the right time, even if it's for something that we don't see as good, that is a true statement and learn from our Parsha. Because what happens in this week's Parsha? You get Saras, and what do? There's no doctor involved. You don't go to the doctor. Now, if I see something weird on my skin, the first person I'm going to is not a Kohen. It's calling Hatzalah. Isn't that true? Wouldn't anybody do that? The first person you call, I don't care if it looks a little white. What if it's not Saras? The first person you go to is the doctor. That's the first person you go to. Something happens, that's the first person you end up calling. But the Torah is telling us no, v'huva el ha-kohen. He sees something weird, a se'es, a sapachas, or a baheres, and he's not even so sure exactly what it is, because he doesn't know the colors. The first person you go to is v'huva el ha-kohen. Who's the kohen, though? Was a Kohen is a sanitary worker? He's a doctor, he's an emergency room doctor who can take care of the issues? No, he has no medical training. There is zero medical training involved. There is just simply put a Kohen who's able to see it, or a Talmud Chacham who tells the Kohen what he sees, and that's it. There's no doctor involved. Not one rofe. There's not one word of refuah in this week's Parsha. Not one. We don't send you to anybody else. There's nothing like you're tahor and therefore go to a doctor because you're sick, because you have a really weird inflammation of your skin or a weird reaction to something that you just had. So even though you're tahor and you no longer have to sit outside the camp, go straight to your emergency room and don't pass go, do not collect $200, just go straight where it is. That's not what it says. It's go to the Kohen. And the message is clearly, it's said by the Chafetz Chaim, it's said by the Lev Eliyahu, it's said over by the times of the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, the Ramban says it, but not directly. You're going to the Tzadikim, and you're asking them, what am I supposed to do about this? When something happens, your first reaction is, what's the Torah view on this? What am I supposed to learn from this? Sometimes we'll be privy to a tremendous gon, a gadol of such stature that you go to him and he tells you, this is what's wrong. This is what's happening. And he can tell you some type of spiritual malady that you're deficient in, that you need to work on so that you can become better physically. Sometimes that's able to happen. And sometimes there is no answer. It's just do tshuva. The general idea of do tshuva and hopefully something will work and something will happen. But the first thought has to be v'huva al ha-kohen. I'm going to the kohen, not specifically a kohen, but a person who's that big of a tzaddik. The remez is, let's go to somebody who's a tremendous, tremendous person who can work his way in here and make everything happen in the process and in the way, and everything should be good. It's hard. It's hard to do that. You know, it took me a while. As you all know, I have a house. I am a real estate mogul that doesn't know how to sell. That happens. They have a house that needs to sell. So it took me a while to realize that I had to go to a tzaddik. And I went to a tzaddik. And the first time that we got a bid on the house was the morning after I went to the tzaddik. Now, a non-believer would say, well, yeah, they probably thought about it beforehand, right? And then it happened to be on the next morning. That's when it ended up happening. That's a Russia. Okay? That is a pure Russia. The way we look at it is, I went to a tzaddik, I asked him for something. Granted, it was a bid that I couldn't take, but he told me that something will happen this week and we'll see what happens next time. This is not a mekobel. This is not a person who by any stretch of the imagination would call himself a mekobel. The tzaddik, I said, what do I need to work on? That's what I said. What do I need to work on? Because a loss of money still means that there's something deficient in me, so what do I have to work on? He told me, obviously, there's nothing I need to work on. It's clearly your wife and kids. So I told my wife and kids, people, you have to work on yourselves. And I extolled them that they should become better people. And obviously, that is what improved. That's what ended up happening. But maybe there was one thing by me. Maybe one or two or a couple things. That might have been. Maybe there were a little. But mostly my wife and kids. But it's something that our mindset has to wrap itself around. Like our mindset is that when something happens, what is the tzaddik say about it? What would a tzaddik say or do in that situation? And again, it's not always that you're going to get an answer. It's not always that you're going to hear somebody say, like, this is what you need to do. Who knows? The parents of a young man who had a really terrible disease caused him to lose all of his hair. I would assume it's Yena Machla, but it's in Alina Lushabach, and I don't think they use the word sartan or cancer. So they said this. He came to Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, and they said, we are afraid that our son is going to have a terrible time in Shiduchim, right? And I would assume they mean for the whole family, because once that happens in some of these families, you go through this. So they went to hear some words of consolation, to hear how they were going to be able to get out of their tough situation, what they were going to be able to do without feeling lost or without feeling hopeless. So Rav Yitzchak brought up this pasuk right over here. He brought up psukim about Saras. And he brought up the fact that there's a strange pasuk in the beginning of Hilchos Saras, in which we say that if he turns all white, kulo afach levon, if you entirely turn white, the whole body turns white, tahor hu. And he asked the question, he said, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would it be tahor? You want to tell me not tameh, I get that. You turn entirely white, you're no longer in the state of tumah. That makes sense, right? Because you were tameh, well, no longer are you tameh. But you say the guy's tahor? The guy looks like a piece of a paper. Like, he looks like one big snowball. And you're saying that guy's tahor? Why is that tahor? Why is that the definition of tahara? So the Chafetz Chaim explained using Navi. I know that's going to be hard for us, but we learn from Tzoras how to knock down our egos. That sometimes our egos need to be knocked down a little bit. Melachim Beis, Parchof Aleph Pasuk Yotes. So Eliol told Achav Nevuah that in the same place that the dogs licked up the blood of Nevos, whom Achav had killed. It wasn't Achav directly, it was Izevel, his non-Jewish wife, who ended up killing Nevel, taking his property and giving it over to Achav so that Achav would feel a little bit better. But essentially, it was Achav who allowed it to happen. In that place, they would soon be licking his blood. His blood would be licked up in the exact same place. So when Achav heard that, he tore his clothing, he donned sackcloth, put ashes on his head, and fasted all day long. When Hashem saw that tshuva, Hashem reappeared to Eliyahu HaNavi to tell him that the evil decree had rescinded, that it's not going to happen to Achav. Now, in the end, Achav did have another decree that happened to him because he didn't improve. But right there, he did tshuva. Says the Chafetz Chaim, do you see how great the midah of hachna is, of knocking yourself down and allowing yourself be meshubed to a gadol, to hear what the gadol has to say and to listen? It removes death from a person. It removes horrible gzeros from a person. Achav deserved to die a worse death than this. He deserved to die a horrible death for all the avodah zarah and shlichus damim and gilui arayos that he had done. And nonetheless, it was all taken away because at that moment, he sat down and he did tshuva. Now, we know the power of tshuva is absolutely unbelievable. But this is more than that. He was machnia himself to Eliyahu HaNavi, which is very difficult for anyone to do, let alone a king that's like that. And he's able to knock himself down. Now, the Torah prescribes this man with tzaras has to do his bodidus. Go to an area, sit by yourself. Michutz lemachne. Go outside the machne and sit by yourself. No longer. And the idea is, don't hang out with the same people. Don't do the same things. Don't do what you were used to doing. And when a person gets that, then you'll do better. See, when you get a spot here, or a spot there, or a spot on your body here and there, whatever it is, you don't really have those thoughts and the feelings. It's just sort of like, yeah, I got to do tshuva, and I'll do a little bit of tshuva, and that's that. Because you see it as like a mikra, like, oh man, it happened once, it happened twice, or something like that. Once in a while, I did something wrong. If your whole body turns white, that's like a Kaddish Baruch Hu sending you the clearest message of the world. You are messed up. You can't have anything to do with anyone. Such a person will automatically be machni himself. He won't be able to stop himself. He feels like he's a piece of garbage. He's broken. Such a person who's broken with subrachan so badly, there's no choice but to do tshuva. He doesn't need to be sent out. It's going to be automatic. When you hear those words from a Navi, you are going to die a horrible death. There is no choice but to accept what you have and start doing something immediately. You become tahor. And that's what happened to Achav. He hears it, immediate tahara. Not einenu tameh. It's not that he just wasn't tameh. He made himself tahor, changed himself completely, was machni himself completely in all ways. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberschni, he says to the family, he says, I know it's been hard for you, but clearly there was a gzar din on the family. There was a gzar din of death, possibly for your son. And this disease allows for a bit of hachna, for you to get the full kapara, for everything to be well, and that everything should happen well. That you should have a refuah shlema, that's obvious, but that everything should work out in the best way. Who knows where it was heading? Now at least you have the ability to knock yourself down and do it all over again. That's a hard line. And a hard line, I don't know if I was a Rav, I would say such a thing to a person. It's a really hard thing to say. They're coming in, it's like, don't worry, Hashem is with you, I'm going to daven for you. They were probably just giving him a name. Yitzchak gave him a Musar Shmuz. Silverstein gave them a real Musar Shmuz to be able to hear. Say that right there, but he must have felt or known that at that point they needed it. At that point, that's there for us to sit there and think. At the end of the day, there's one line, and we'll end with this. In Sanhedrin, Tzadi Zayin Amud Beis, it mentions that when Mashiach comes, the Malchus Tishapach Laminus, it will turn into a bunch of apostates, people that don't believe, that are into their own, and don't care about anybody. I don't know when that changed. I kind of thought that's been existing for the last 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years, but maybe since David and Shlomo Melech, but there were intermittent periods. But the pshat is, from the Gemara, it says, we learned that from the Pasuk, Kulu afach lavan, that when everything turns white, tahor hu. Mashiach is going to come, it will be all tahor when it's kulu afach lavan. It's these times, in a more general fashion, these times in which we look at ourselves and we say, well, what are we supposed to do with ourselves? When it's a spot here and a spot there and that's that, you feel like, okay, I'll do this and I'll do that. And I'll what. But when you need a complete recovery, a complete upheaval, like a total turnaround from where you are, you need to be kulo afach levan torhu. You need that to happen. You need something crazy to be. And that's the Malchus turning into Minos. It happened by the days of Achashverosh. It happened by the Greeks with the Hashmonaim. Unfortunately, it's the idea of when you hit rock bottom. When you hit rock bottom, that's when everything changes. It's such a concept, a crazy concept.